This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Ryan Santos, a longtime FFPC best ball drafter. After a great 2016, Santos cashed more than $26,000 last season. In this episode, we break down what tactics he applied in his best ball leagues and how he'll try to replicate it this month when drafts kick off for 2018. You can follow Santos on Twitter at FFLINX. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it helps support the podcast channel as well. Now, without further ado, here's $26,000 high-stakes best ball winner, Ryan Santos. We're excited this week on the RotoViz High Stakes Lowdown Season 3, the Season 3 premiere, to have one of the more prolific guys out there in the FFPC best ball space. You follow him on Twitter at FFLINX. Ryan Santos joining the program this week. Ryan, thanks so much for making some time for the Lowdown.
Thank you for having me.
This is exciting to have you on. The Super Bowl is fresh in our memory. It was just completed on Sunday. We are already turning the page to 2018. Before we get into to your brain and what your early thoughts are on these 28 round best balls, when you're not playing high stakes fantasy football, tell the listeners what you're doing for a living.
I'm a Port Authority police officer.
A police officer that makes time for plenty of fantasy football, I would imagine. You can, it's easy for you to fit that in at your own time and work at your own pace.
Yeah, it's a little tough to keep as many as I do going, but I enjoy it, so.
You do enjoy it, and you do good at it. 2016 was great for you. 2017 was even better, man. First place in 12 of 35 $250 levels of best balls. You went 1-for-1 in the 150 level, 6 of 18 in the 77, 5 out of 26 for the 35, and you cashed in 8 of your 10 double ups. I mean, it's an insane year. Those are really good stats. To me, you really seem dialed in on these best ball drafts in 2017. I'm curious as to what your thoughts are on any particular rules of thumb that you live by in each draft, or are they fungible? Is there nothing that you will follow as an absolute cardinal rule when you're putting these teams together?
I don't really follow anything as a cardinal rule. I basically just try to treat each draft as if it's like its own. I don't go into any draft like a set roster construction or guys that I feel like I have to have on the team. And especially with the best balls, you got to just be able to adjust on the fly, especially in the later rounds, because there's no pickups, there's nothing, so you have to make sure you fill out your roster.
You know, one of the things I always think is interesting, I'm sure will come up with people who are drafting best balls for the first time in 2018, is being on the end, having like a top three pick or a bottom three pick, and then, not getting skunked on a kicker or defense, or, having multiple kickers and defenses. How do you play off when you're at those spots at the draft? How do you kind of guess when those runs are coming? Is it simply just a matter of, you do a lot of them, so you kind of know when it's coming? Or is it just like, okay, I can kind of sense that this is the spot where, a lot of these teams are going to start grabbing kickers and defenses and tight ends for that part too, with the tight point and a half per catch for tight ends in this tight end premium format, certainly they can go pretty quickly too. What are your thoughts on when you're drafting on those ends? How do you kind of guess those runs?
The tight ends is kind of hard to tell because they could literally go anywhere throughout the draft. The run could start anywhere. And if you're at the end of the round, there could be a six or seven player run, you can miss it. But with the kickers, I'll try to get at least one of like the elite kickers that is like the kicker for the team, somebody like Guskowski or Tucker. And I'll always have I'll always have three kickers on my team just because of the turnover and the injuries. There's been plenty of teams by the end of the season where you have no kicker and you're basically taking a zero. And for the defenses, I usually just draft two just because there's no injury concerns. So you're at least not getting a zero for the most part.
How does it, because for people who've never done an FFPC best ball before, there are 28 rounds, and you have a standard FFPC lineup where, one quarterback, two running backs, two receivers, a tight end, kicker, defense, and two flexes. Do you feel, Ryan, that you've been able to utilize that double flex to your advantage for people who maybe aren't familiar with it or aren't able to, really, draft dominant teams that way? Because I think so many of us are programmed into, me and myself included, two running backs, three receivers, a tight end, a flex, But when you can build a roster around four running backs, or you can build a roster around four receivers or three tight ends, I mean, has that worked out for you doing that? I mean, you seem like a best player available type of guy, but I got to imagine that specific lineup format, that little hitch in how you can assemble these best ball lineups with that double flex. I think that you're experienced enough that you have taken advantage of that more than once.
Yeah, it definitely does come into effect. I mean, I don't have a set roster construction that I use for every draft, but I usually try to have like at least between 7 and 9 receivers and running backs, and around like 3 to 5 tight ends. If I draft the tight ends early, I might be a little more inclined to go with the three. And if I wait till later, I'll maybe try to grab a couple extra ones to use for those double flexes.
When you look back at 2017, certainly being overinvested in Todd Gurley was an awesome thing. being overinvested in DeAndre Hopkins, that was awesome, when you have situations like that. But it doesn't always help. I mean, certainly anybody who was drafting early was getting a lot of David Johnson, that didn't work out for them. As you look back on not only this past season, Ryan, but previous years when you've done best balls, is being overinvested in a certain player or, several players, is that necessarily a bad thing for your portfolio?
Personally, I don't really worry too much about my exposure level to each player because, like I said, I treat every draft separately. And there's always going to be the good or the bad. You could have a David Johnson last year who didn't play the whole year, but, if you drafted Todd Gurley or Alvin Kamara in all your drafts, then you did pretty well.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your thought, because I got another question on what you just said.
No, I mean, there's also a lot of people who don't like to have too much exposure to certain players. The advice that I would give them is to do that more in the early rounds if you want to spread out your exposure level. But if you have somebody later on in the later round, somebody like a Ted Ginn or Alvin Kamara last year, you want to try to grab as many as those guys because those are the guys that'll win you the leagues.
I mean, I feel like when you're early on, when I'm doing drafts, there's always certain players in each round that I don't want to have anything to do with. I don't care how many drafts I'm doing. I'm not getting those guys on my team this year. Do you feel like there's not only players like that for you that you will never draft, given where they're going in certain spots? And then the flip side of that, do you feel like there's been times when you were always hitting the same player, not always, but a significant amount of the time you're always taking Todd Gurley in the third or DeAndre Hopkins in the fourth or something like that? Have you ever found yourself or caught yourself doing that?
Yeah, there's definitely been some of the guys that I said that I would try not to draft, but there's always a point where if they fall far enough that I'll take them. And I definitely do see myself drafting a lot of the same guys, especially somebody like Mark Ingram last year who was going a little later with the ADP than I thought he should be. So whenever he was around like the late fourth, early fifth, I would grab him.
Let's look ahead to 2018 here, Ryan. As far as ADP goes, I mean, obviously there's real no established ADP out there yet, and I think there's a tendency, and I know I've said this in the past, going into seasons, that, well, this year the ADP is going to be all over the place. This year you can't really predict where this guy's going. You can't get a good handle on any of these guys, especially in the FFPC, where any given player can go anywhere, it seems like. And I'm exaggerating a little bit when I say that, but I look towards 2018 as you kind of look towards this coming draft season. I mean, could that be the case this year? Are we in for the craziest year yet with these players going all over the place, at least until, we hit the late drafting season in July and August? Could we be in for a crazy ADP year?
Yeah, I mean, I try to look at the first two rounds this year, and it seems like people are going to be all over the place. I mean, usually you could tell for the first round, usually maybe like 13, 14 guys that you know will go within that first round. But I mean, just looking at it now, there's 20 plus guys that I could see going in the first round in any given draft,
It
which is
almost
also something that you could take advantage of by drafting early on if you have certain guys that you like that maybe are pushed back a little further now than they will be later.
Yeah, because I mean, I look at some of these guys that could be going in the second round, and they to me, like last year, they were like slam dunk first round. Like Mike Evans is a perfect example. That guy was going in like the early to or not early, the mid to late first round in a ton of drafts last year, and I feel like after this season, he's going to drop off clearly to the second round, maybe even the third round, and he's a guy that I think should have a nice bounce back. You know, you draft these proven players off bad years, and I feel like more often than not, you can really cash in on that. Has that been a phenomenon that you've noticed that you've been able to take advantage of, where a guy you think is unfairly depressed in value in the draft, and you end up hitting him quite a bit and picking him up, and then he pays off because it was just simply a recency bias from other fantasy players that, you know, unfairly driving this guy down that makes him a value and makes him a steal?
Yeah, even looking back to last year, you had guys like Todd Gurley and DeAndre Hopkins who fell back because of their, the year they had before, or DeAndre Hopkins, who's actually proven that he's pretty much quarterback proof, but people were worried, with the rookie quarterback coming in, and they fell back to like the third, fourth round and ended up being really good values.
I think, and obviously as we get to the preseason and training camp and everything like that, I mean, some of these guys in the second round and the third round, they're obviously gonna, be pushed up, and some of those first round picks that are sort of fringe first round picks right now might drop off. So obviously, now is the time to take advantage of not having a lot of information out there for 2018. I think if you want, and at the FFPC, we'll probably have drafts going within the next week or so. But now's the time to strike while the iron's hot, and get in while everybody else is sort of playing a catch up. What are the chances that, specifically talking about, we talked about Kamara quite a bit already. What are the chances that both he and Mark Ingram don't repeat what they did last year? And do you see any, as a piggyback to that, do you see any other, quote unquote, tandem backfields right now that are worth snagging both guys? Because obviously Ingram and Kamara were fantastic if you got them both last year. They both crushed it and did awesome for a lot of teams that took the chance on drafting both of them. So, what are your thoughts on Ingram and Kamara this year? And then, do you see anybody else that could do, maybe at least a on a smaller level what they did in 2017?
I don't think they'll be able to repeat what they did last year, but I think they could both still be back end running back ones, early running back twos. But I mean, basically what they did last year, I don't think that's ever going to be repeated again.
And nobody, I mean, like I'm trying to think of like what we could have had in Kansas City last year had Spencer Ware not gotten hurt. You could have had like a Spencer Ware Kareem Hunt, tandem that were both those guys proved valuable. Do you see anything like that? And obviously we'll see what happens at the NFL draft, but you don't see anything like that right now. Obviously not to that level, but anything that could be close to that level.
On a smaller level, if they maybe utilize Tariq Cohen a little better, I could see Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen being
Oh
one of
yeah.
those combinations.
And now you have, and I don't know what your thoughts are on them getting a Nagy in there as the head coach, but certainly you go from John Fox to him. It's like two polar ends of the spectrum of offensive ingenuity. You know what I mean? I think the Bears' offense could be set up for a lot of great things next year with Trubisky and Cohen and Howard and Shaheen, and they maybe they take Ridley or somebody like that in the first round of the draft and get a playmaker on the outside. That there could be a lot of bounce back, especially in draft school with some Bears skill guys this year.
Oh, definitely. I can see that too.
There's been talk about a first round running back explosion. This is something that I think, I don't know, it probably dates back to week 12 or week 13 of the season. And as we look to 2018 drafts, there's been talk of maybe as many as 9 or 10 running backs going in the first round. You think about the guys who would be up there, Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley. It seems like Those two are jockeying for the 101 and the 102. You have David Johnson coming back. Of course, Ezekiel Elliott. We saw what Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara did this past year. Kareem Hunt is in that conversation as well. And certainly don't just eliminate Devontae Freeman or LeSean McCoy. I mean, those guys would be right up there as well. And I'm sure I'm missing on some other guys that would certainly be in the first round running back conversation. What are your thoughts? Besides those guys, are there any dark horse running backs that could go in the first round? And how many running backs do you think will, more often than not, be going in the first round this season?
I think it's going to be a very heavy running back early first round this year. I think they'll probably be, in most drafts, a minimum of 6, possibly even 10 running backs in the first round. You have those set guys, Bell, Gurley, David Johnson, Zeke. Then you also have, like you said, all those other guys that will, if they don't make it to the first round, they'll definitely be early second round.
How do you handle a guy like David Johnson in drafts right now? I mean, he has a new head coach. He's, probably going to have a new offensive coordinator. We don't know if Larry Fitzgerald's coming back yet or not. How do you handle a guy? And Carson Palmer, we don't know if he's coming back. How do you handle a guy with his elite-level talent on a team that's not only undergoing so much change, but maybe won't have the supporting cast that we've been accustomed to seeing in Arizona around David Johnson?
Oh, he's somebody that I might, especially early on, maybe limit my exposure to him a little bit, but I'll definitely want to have some. Because we have an elite talent like that, he's always going to prevail, I feel like. But maybe in the earlier drafts, before we know, who the quarterback's going to be, if Fitzgerald's coming back, all that stuff, maybe I'll try to limit my exposure a little bit.
Is there a chance, let's say Fitz doesn't come back, and let's say Carson Palmer hangs it up, is there any chance that David Johnson could slip into the second round this season just because Arizona, would switch to more of a rebuilding and developing young talent mode? Is there any chance that you could get David Johnson in the second round?
He could be similar to something like Gurley was last year, where, he slips a little further than he should, and he's one of those guys that could end up winning you championships.
Yeah, I mean, you compare David Johnson with a stud in the first round, or maybe, Hopkins or Brown and getting, taking David Johnson early in the second, that'd be definitely a good start for anybody this season. Evan Engram kind of came out of nowhere. I don't want to say he came out of nowhere because there was a lot of people that thought that there was a lot of talent there. I don't know if anybody predicted what we saw in year one from him. Certainly had a fantastic rookie year as the tight end for the Giants. Where does he currently sit as you look at tight ends for 2018? How high up is he on your list of tight ends? I mean, I would assume he takes another step forward, given that he will have his rookie year under his belt. But how good can he be? How high is he on your list right now?
I haven't really done any of my rankings yet, but especially being a Giants fan, I really do like what I saw out of Evan Engram. I might have to temper expectations a little bit next year when Odell comes back. If Marshall comes back, they might get a couple more offensive weapons. But I would say he definitely hovers around the top 5 tight ends for me.
As a Giants fan, let's talk about the new coach in New York and how it impacts guys like, Eli Manning, Beckham, Engram, the running game there. I mean, I'm not sure if there's a – well, I don't think there's a long-term answer in the backfield yet. But is there anybody that – I mean, are you moving these guys up based on what Shurmur was able to do with Minnesota last year, losing – basically that Bridgewater they lost, and then Sam Bradford goes down, they lose Dalvin Cook. He did a lot with that offense there. What's his impact going to be for the Giants in New York?
Yeah, I definitely love what he did with that offense, and hopefully the Giants stick with Eli. And once they get Odell back, maybe Brandon Marshall comes back. He's not going to be, the old Brandon Marshall, but if we get something out of him, I could see this offense definitely taking a big step forward.
Is Beckham your number 3 receiver in drafts right now? I mean, if you had to make that choice, would you put Brown and Hopkins ahead of him and then Beckham 3rd on that list? Or am I giving him too much credit for, coming off a down year and having to go into a new offense with a new head coach, new offensive coordinator? I know you haven't done your ranks, but just off the top of your head, does Beckham seem like the 3rd receiver?
Yeah, he's probably either 3 or 4, maybe. I still have Julio and Beckham pretty much neck and neck. But they would probably be either 3 or 4.
Okay. getting back to the philosophy of best ball drafts, you know, these 28 set it and forget it drafts, anybody who is jumping in for the first time this year, Ryan, never done it before, what's the one piece of advice that you, if you could only give them one piece of advice, what's the most important thing that they need to apply to each draft that they participate in?
I'd say, especially for best balls, probably that roster composure is probably just as important as the players that you pick. Because like I said, there's no pickups in best ball, or at least in most of the best ball leagues. And every position has to be filled every week, whether there's buys or injuries. So with 28 spots, you want to try to roster, you know, enough quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, tight ends. And the big thing I always do is I always have three kickers, just because the turnover and the injuries are pretty pretty intense with the kickers. Yeah, that's pretty much.
And forgive me if you mentioned this already, but when it comes to quarterbacks, if you were to draft one early, you know, a Rodgers or a Brady or a Russell Wilson or somebody like that, are you usually only going two quarterbacks then, or would you still try to get three?
If I have somebody like Rodgers, I'll usually draft two, but depending how my roster ends up towards the end, if I feel like I have enough running backs or receivers that I like, I might grab that third guy.
Do you ever feel like handcuffing is more important in a best ball, or is it less important? I mean, this is you're not talking about a national contest here with the FFPC best balls. You're talking about, you know, going up against 11 other owners in one league, so you don't necessarily have to, you know, draft this behemoth that needs to beat thousands of teams or hundreds of teams. You're just trying to beat 11 other guys. As far as handcuffing goes, do you find yourself doing that, or is it just kind of like, you know what, if it happens, it happens, but I'm not gonna sacrifice giving up on a better player just so I can lock up a backfield?
I think I actually like handcuffing more than most do, especially with the best balls, because if you lock up the handcuff, you know, you at least have somebody that's going to fill that position. Whereas if you were just drafting other handcuffs or maybe high upside guys later on, if your stud gets hurt and that guy never makes his way to getting time, then it kind of hurts you. And another thing I actually like to do too is with the receivers, if there's a, you know, say somebody like a Sammy Watkins and a Robert Woods that are, you know, one guy that's a little high up, one guy that's a little cheaper, I'll try to grab two of the receivers, because if one goes off one week, another one might go off a different week. They could kind of offset each other.
What about, like, I'm just, you know, off the top of my head, I think about Pittsburgh this year. I think you could probably do it. I think you could get Brown, Smith-Schuster, and Martavis Bryant if you really wanted to, all in the same draft. Is that something that you would do? Would, you know, collect three receivers on the same, you know, elite offense like that?
An elite offense like that, I definitely would. I had plenty of teams last year where I had, I took Juju late pretty often last year, which worked out, but, I also fell for the Martavis Bryant, where I was taking him 6th, 7th round, and right. He didn't pan out. But luckily, usually when I had him, I had Juju late, and that helped offset it.
Yeah, that's and I think you could, you know, with the crop of rookie receivers that's coming in, certainly isn't one of the best ever, putting it mildly. But I think that there's a couple of rookie receivers that we can look at once they get, you know, drafted, and we see what sort of situation they're coming into. There could be a Juju Smith-Schuster type guy this year that you might want to target late as well. Ryan, give us a guy that you think, you know, as these drafts get going here in the next week or two, give us a guy that is going to be going early in these drafts that you think is going to be a bust in 2018, and then maybe a mid-round sleeper. This year's Kamara, this year's, Kareem Hunt to a certain level, depending upon when you drafted him last year, you could have got him in like the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th round. A mid round guy that could be a sleeper that could really help win a lot of people leagues.
I think I'll probably avoid Dez Bryant this year. Depending, I mean, if he falls back far enough, I'll take him. But I can still see, just for the name recognition, I can still see him going in the second round, or maybe even somebody like Thielen, who might be going a little higher than I think he should be. And as far as mid-round guys, there's a lot of mid-round receivers that I like that should be going, you know, the mid to late rounds. Some guys like Marvin Jones, Robert Woods, Corey Davis, Marquise Goodwin. And actually with the Redskins getting Alex Smith. I think Crowder might end up being a pretty good value in mid rounds.
You know, something that I think is interesting to compare redraft to best ball. I think, you know, with zero RB, you know, really the last 7 or 8 years really being utilized more than ever, I think a lot of teams will start off with four receivers and a tight end, four receivers and a quarterback, something like that. And then they'll pound these mid-round running backs, you know, the Mark Ingrams, the Alvin Kamaras, you know, Kareem Hunts, those type of guys in the mid rounds. You see that a lot in redraft. In best ball, I feel like, I don't want to say it's reverse, but I see a lot of teams trying to get those two or three bell cow running backs early in the draft, you know, two in the first 3 rounds or three in the first 4 rounds, and then take these receivers in the mid rounds, you know, like the Ted Ginns, these big play guys, Juju Smith-Schuster, guys that could, you know, have 160-yard touchdown catch, and all of a sudden they're starting for you, and everything else is gravy. So it's a little bit reverse to me in best ball. Have you had success more so with one rather than the other, with, you know, pounding running backs early and then taking receivers, or pounding receivers early and then taking running backs, or has it just been about a horse apiece and it just matters, you know, getting the right players on your squad?
I think I've definitely done better going running back heavy early, because I feel like, you know, you grab the late, pound a bunch of late round running backs, and a lot of them aren't going to pan out. You might get a couple of guys that, you know, do very well for you, but you're always going to find those mid round receivers, guys last year like Marvin Jones, Robert Woods, Marquise Goodwin, who people were overlooking, and those guys, you know, some games were giving you 2 touchdowns, they're giving you the big games, and also had a pretty high floor as well.
Yeah, Robbie Anderson, I know, was included in that, and certainly Cooper Kupp, for, you know, how late he went, he certainly paid off in a big way last year. My friend, had your drafts pay off in a big way in 2017. By my math, you won more than $26,000 this past year in the FFPC. Are you planning on doing anything fun with that cash, Ryan? Reinvesting some of it, all of it, none of it? What are your thoughts on what you're going to do with all that cash this year?
I'll most likely be reinvesting all of it, going back hard. And I just
Nothing
got to make sure,
fun.
you know,
You're
the
not.
wife doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to do anything fun with the money. Like, take the wife out for a nice dinner, nice night on the town. Nothing like that.
No, I gotta keep all that money away from her. She can't know about it.
You know, the high stakes players are good for several reasons. That's another one of them, right there.
It's hard to find the time now to do anything.
Yeah, exactly. Ryan, listen, man, this has been fun talking with you today, this week on the High Stakes Lowdown. I wish you nothing but the best for 2018. Certainly, you made a big increment up in the prizes from 2016 to 2017. Hopefully, you take another step again in 2018. We'll all follow you on Twitter at FFLinks. I know you post a lot of great stuff there. Anybody who plays high stakes or just, you know, best ball in general should definitely be following you with a lot of the stuff you put out there. Very, very good stuff for anybody trying to get better. And we'll try to get better this season in the lowdown as well. And I think we definitely did a great job in this first episode. Ryan, thanks so much for joining me this week, and we'll talk to you again soon, buddy.
All right, thanks for having me again. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter at RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.